There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Attention. Attention, students of Max Mike Movies High. Due to the destructive and terrible nature of that satanic music you all insist on playing, Dr. Bumpy's seminar on Cause I Wanna, and You're Gonna Like It, has been canceled this week. I hope you students are happy. Your constant tardiness and rambunctiousness, not to mention your constant playing of the violent and immoral music of Myron Florin, Whoopi John Wilfart, and Weird Al Yankovic, have pushed poor Dr. Bumpy and most of the rest of the faculty to nervous breakdowns. Kids, polka music kills. It's not cool. It's not hip. It rots the soul, erodes the moral fiber of this country, and causes severe acne in marmosets. It's true. Let's have no more of this filth in this school. We have a proud tradition of refrigerator and air conditioning repair to uphold. Now, I turn you over to our guest lecturers, Professor Max, I Love the Schmengi Brothers Levine, and Professor Mike, The Accordion Ruined My Life Luce. Some words of wisdom for the students, Professor Luce?
Yeah, could you say the name of this week's movie?
Why?
In case people would like to know.
Oh, yeah, I suppose. Yes, it's 1979's Rock and Roll High School, produced by The Core Man.
Be like The Core Man.
Live like The Core Man. Yeah. But before we take into our hearts the teachings of The Core Man, we have our...
poll question.
Last week, we wanted to know, who is your favorite made-for-film, not adapted from a book, detective? And our first answer this time, we're going to go to that snowy, frost-covered hive of rock and roll depravity, Canada, I guess.
You said hive.
And Vince. Yes, as I'm breaking out in them.
I hope they're wearing their yellow jackets. It's cold up there.
I see what you... Show's over. We'll never top that.
Yay.
Vince says, Francis McDormand is one of my favorite movie detectives.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah, she's
Marge.
Real good.
Marge. Always, I always liked you, Marge. Always liked
you,
Marge.
She's real good. But Inspector Clouseau was for a long time. Really? Okay. I haven't seen any of those films in a while, and I wonder if they hold up or are just nostalgia pieces now. This poll question made me realize how many screen detectives have their origins in books and how few are exclusively made for film.
It's true.
Well, we like to teach here.
Yeah. Yeah, go Clouseau. Especially that racism. That's the best part.
Yeah. My kiddo, my little yellow friend.
Yeah, that plays well today.
Yeah. Brian Mundo says, Inspector Gadget. Well, he is always on duty.
Did not see that coming, Mad Cat.
Next time! And inventor of the crime-fighting tool, the Tatum, Richard Tatum says, if it's an original idea made for TV or film, then sugar.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's Colin Farrell, right?
Yeah, did you watch that?
I watched some of it. He was actually pretty good.
Oh, I'm guessing you didn't get far enough to find out about the twist.
I probably did not.
Oh, no, you didn't. There is a big twist in that show. I don't know if they're going to do another season or not, but it was really interesting. And all I'll say is it's not exactly what you think it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Brad Albertson, brother of Jack, I guess.
Sure.
Says Detective Nick Burkhart in the Grimm series. Everything else is like an adaptation.
Oh, I don't know
that. Oh, I never saw that. I heard good things, though. Dr. Steve Kellner says, That's what he says.
No, he doesn't.
He does. H-M dot, dot, dot. It's right there. Columbo and Benoit Blanc. Yeah, there's a team.
Wow. That would be weird.
Wouldn't that be something? They drive each other insane.
Just one more thing. No, I think I have the last word. Just one more thing. Just a second,
My wife loves your hair. Yeah. Dr. Professor Rebecca Pelkey says Veronica Mars. Okay, oh. Never watched it. And Tatum Inventing Richard steps in and says, oh, yes, I second Veronica Mars, although I really do dig sugar.
Oh.
Aw, honey, honey. Jen Ng says Gene Hunt from Life on Mars and the sequel TV show Ashes to Ashes.
No.
I swear that's familiar, but I don't know what it is.
I don't either, but I love it when they introduce us to new things. So thanks,
Jen. Okay, we're going
to
look into this, Jen. Thank you. Dave. Says, the guy in Chinatown, Jake, comes to mind. Jack Nicholson could be so charismatic, and I always wished for a sequel with the same aesthetics. There is a sequel. It's called The Two Jakes, and apparently it's terrible.
Ah.
I liked the clothes and the cars and the use of color in that movie, or at least I remember liking all those things. That's fair. I assume, however, that you're asking because Roger Rabbit is next in your series.
Roger Rabbit's not a detective.
There was nothing interesting about the detective in that one. Bob Hoskins in a trench coat, was it?
Yeah.
I certainly agree with the Columbo idea, but I will go with Chinatown. In the last year, I've been watching Elsbeth, I've heard of, haven't seen, also Prodigal Son, both of which were fun sometimes. With TV series, the actual shows have a wide range of quality. Yeah, that's true. The advantage of going with the movies is that it was a one-episode perfect presentation.
Oh.
Cool. Matt Reisman says, for movies, I think I've got to go with Benoit Blanc.
Mm.
He instantly felt familiar despite being an original character. For TV, it's got to be Sean Spencer from Psych. Oh, wow. I've never seen that. I hear it's really good.
Me either.
The whole era of USA Network shows was fun. Murder Most Moist. And Psych was one of the best of those shows. Also, great theme song.
Mm.
Nick Hoffman says, Peter Falk, as always. I didn't know Peter Falk was a detective. I thought he was just an actor.
Okay. Columbo.
Oh! Ethan Curran also chimes in with, I also jumped first to Columbo, instrumental in my love of the genre.
Mm.
Charles Forsyth, Monk, great stories and performance by the incomparable Tony Shalhoub. Actually, there is only one best answer, Detective Pikachu. That's an adaptation.
I think that no. I'm going to have to vote no.
Ends up with, no, wait, Columbo. Yeah. I think we have a real front runner here.
Yeah.
And we have a fine soft morning from Bielolading.
Top of the morning, Turalurra, Dr. McIntyre.
Can't go wrong with Murder, She Wrote's Jessica Fletcher.
What?
Played by Angela Lansbury.
Well, yeah.
I vote for Ms. Fletcher because she goes against type. Okay. The classic detectives are off-putting, iconoclastic, and not particularly friendly. Think of the aloof Sherlock Holmes, the fussy Hercule Poirot, and the caustic Miss Marple. Caustic? Really?
Okay. Actually, she just doesn't talk much, but okay. Yeah.
Fletcher doesn't need to be the classic detective because the writers cleverly position her as a best-selling mystery novel writer. She's already got her street cred. Okay, I don't think being a mystery novel... I'm sorry, Tony Kellner. I don't think being a mystery novel writer really loads you down with street cred.
Now, wait, isn't this Bill O'Lading?
Yeah.
Or I thought you said Tony Kellner.
Oh, I did.
Because she's a mystery writer.
Who actually is a mystery writer.
I have seen her walking on a street before, so she does have street cred.
But is she down with the street?
Well, she's on it.
Yeah. Free from needing to characterize her as having a detective's mind, she's already one. Look at the books on the shelves.
Yeah.
And free from a husband, he dies prior to the beginning of the series. Who kill him, Jessica? Who? Lansbury is free to portray Fletcher as a charming and kind person, but she's also no dummy. The show is formulaic and predictable, a problem of the mystery genre overall, but it always draws you in. Lansbury is amazing in the role. Her charisma outshines the supporting cast, which came and went over the years. It's hard to imagine another actress single-handedly leading a primetime drama for 12 seasons. My vote goes to Jessica Fletcher from Cabot Cove, the murder capital of New England. Which I still maintain Jessica Fletcher was a serial killer. I mean, everywhere she goes, someone dies.
Yeah. I will say, too, I have been to Cabot Cove. It's actually at Universal Studios in California. Oh. I will say this. I saw something else about trivia about that show. Apparently, one of the reasons you tended to see, how to put this nicely, less currently hired actors on her show.
Has-beens.
Well, I wasn't going to say that. But apparently the reason you tended to see them is that she would have them hired so they could keep their health benefits and things like that, so they were still part of the union.
Nice. So,
and, you know, it's nice because she says, I'm going to help you. I'm going to have you killed. No, no, it's for a good cause. Yeah. So, wow, Jessica Fletcher didn't see that coming.
And we have a call from my favorite femme fatale.
Oh, dear. That means dead lady.
Doris Empelmeyer.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Doris Empelmeyer here to answer your poll question. What are the detectives you like that are not from books? Well, I am a detective aficionado, as, you know, Max knows. And anyway, so many are from books, and they're great. I'm going to come up with one that's kind of unconventional and kind of silly, but you know what? His movies are wonderful, and I'll watch them over and over again. And I'm going to say Inspector Clouseau from the Pink Panther movies. Definitely not from books. And very funny, very silly. For that matter, you could go with Frank Drebin from the Naked Gun movies. We'll throw him in there, too. And then from a television show, I just highly recommend. There's a new show, British show called Ludwig, and that one's really good. David Mitchell is the star of that one. So those are my answers. I hope you guys have a wonderful week. I know there's a lot of snow, so be careful out there, especially you, Max. And I'll see you later. Bye.
Huh.
Okay. Another for Inspector Clouseau. That is two more than I thought we'd have.
Yeah.
And Frank Drebin? Okay.
I mean,
I've never seen. Yeah.
He did actually solve crimes every week.
Yeah, but he solved them the sort of Maxwell Smart way of just falling into things.
It results.
Ludwig, I've never seen.
Oh, I like Ludwig. It's that rule, that law in Britain, that even if you're a comedian, at some point you have to be a detective.
And I think that's actually a statute written into the Magna Carta.
It is, and David Mitchell is one of the comedians. He shows up on a lot of other British shows, like 8 out of 10 Cats and Would I Lie to You and stuff like that. And he's one of those comedians that I'm just like, there's just no way. And he got a show. Huh. And it's actually a pretty cool show. I watched the first season, and I liked it, so I get it.
Okay, well, very cool answers from all of you. Thank you. Columbo, clearly the winner here. What about you, Mike? Who's your favorite non-adapted celluloid detective?
Banachek? The Snoop Sisters? Oh, no, it's got to be Columbo. I love Columbo. I own the whole series. Even the later ones, which aren't very good, are still Columbo. And I like seeing him make annoying, smart aleck people, you know, have to pay their dues and everything.
But he never solves the mystery of what is his first name.
An answer to that, and it had to do with a screen grab and a zoom in. Apparently there is one point where he shows his ID, and if you look closely and decipher with, you know, super magic whatever hexa beams, apparently his first name is Frank.
Okay, yeah,
but
that works.
Canonically he only answers his first name's Lieutenant, so sort of like Spock, we probably couldn't pronounce it. First name's T'Pring, so T'Pring Columbo. But yeah, I gotta go with Columbo. Okay. I love Benoit Blanc too, and you know, there's probably tons of other people I could pick up. But when I did the question, I was thinking of Columbo. But what about you? Who is your favorite, not made for a literature detective?
Columbo. I'm right there with you. I also like a new one, Cordelia Cupp, from a show called The Residence on Netflix. Now, to be fair, technically the show The Residence is kind of an adaptation of a nonfiction book, but Cordelia Cupp isn't in it. It's a nonfiction book just about the history of the White House and its staff.
Oh.
And this is like a murder, by the way. I think she's a lot of fun. I love the fact that she's a bird watcher and fanatical about it.
Because of how much you like to watch? You don't watch birds.
I used to. I was into birds.
Real? Well, I think we're going to leave you being into birds off this show.
Well, now, of course, I simply pray for the death of old turkeys, but I was a bird watcher.
Really?
Yeah.
I've known you for over 40 years. I've never known that.
Yeah, I wasn't fanatical about it, but I did enjoy it.
And what did you watch them do?
Nothing.
Horrible, unspeakable things.
Foul, filthy, disgusting. Anyway, but these were great. Thank you very much. And of course, our hunger for your answers is never ending and ravenous. So we've got another one for you. What band or musician who hasn't made a movie yet would you like to see in a non-concert film?
I don't know. Okay.
And at the end of the hour, I will tell you how you may answer on the off chance you don't actually already know.
You think we're going to get to an hour?
The facts. Budget. Well, this was produced by Roger Corman, so it should surprise nobody. $300,000.
That much?
That much. That's a big one for Roger Corman. This is 1979. And the box office, $1.5 million.
You go, Roger.
Yeah,
prove us wrong every time.
That is not a lot of money, but it made money, as almost all of his movies did.
I mean, five times its budget. That's better than what you're looking for. So
that is absolutely true. Well, the Corman is in fact the executive producer. He is not the director. The directors, technically directors, are Alan Arkush. And Joe Dante.
Okay.
Yeah. Joe Dante, guy who did Gremlins, technically he only directed about two or three scenes. I'll get to that.
Okay.
But basically Alan Arkush collapsed of exhaustion toward the end of the film.
Oh.
And they had to bring somebody else in.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Toward the end, we see an on-screen concert of the Ramones. It was attended by actual Ramones fans.
Okay.
Whose uncontrollable, raucous behavior terrified the lead, poor PJ Souls. During the Ramones concert sequence at the Roxy near the end of the film, the late singer of the seminal Los Angeles punk band The Germs, a guy named Darby Crash, can be seen right there in the front row.
Ah.
Before this movie, PJ Souls had never heard of the Ramones.
Well, interestingly, before this movie, I'd never heard of PJ Souls.
Yeah.
Sorry.
She was given their music to listen to, but said she didn't like it initially, but she had so much fun working with them that she became a fan of theirs.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, she lists this movie as her favorite film ever.
Out of five?
She's done a few, mostly, we'll get to that. But
yeah.
Dee Dee Ramone was such a bad actor that while he started out with seven lines, they cut it to two. His two lines are... Hey, pizza! And hey, pizza, it's great. Let's dig in. That scene, according to the Ramones managers, took 30 to 40 takes because he couldn't get the lines right. Yeah.
Oh, Dee Dee. Wonder you were replaced?
The Ramones were not the first choice for this movie as the musical act. Originally, Todd Rundgren was going to star.
Okay.
But they couldn't come to any kind of agreement. I think he wanted to be paid more than $20.
Yeah, well.
Cheap Trick was contacted. Same problem. Then they went over to like Warner Brothers Records. And the first suggestion there was Devo.
Oh.
But Arkush decided they had too much of their own concept.
That's fair. There actually is a Devo song in the soundtrack. But.
Mm-hmm. And they did consider this obscure band called Van Heffelen, Van Halogen, I'm not sure.
Apparently,
they were considered too raucous and would be difficult to handle.
I mean, that's probably not untrue.
Yeah. And to this day, apparently, Todd Rundgren regrets passing up the role.
Really?
Yeah. The Ramones were paid a total of $25,000 for appearing in the film.
For them, that's actually probably a pretty good deal.
That was one of their big paydays. But they had to play shows in Southern California to help pay their hotel bills.
Oh, God. That's.
During the 21-day shoot, that's a long one for a Corman movie, Dee Dee Ramone got arrested for fighting with a roadie, overdosed in jail, and wound up in Cedars-Sinai Hospital with a $3,000 medical bill.
Well.
One of the most quotable lines I find in this movie was improvised by Roger Corman staple Dick Miller, who improvised, "Those Ramones are ugly, ugly people." There's an inside joke right at the beginning about Roger Corman's notoriously stingy budget. When the New World Picture credit appears on screen, you can hear birds very literally going, cheep, cheep, cheep. Now, to be fair, Corman was also a publicity genius, and to save money and also get a little work in, he invited music journalists to work as extras in return for getting to be on the set and interview the principals.
Wow.
So didn't have to pay him. Yeah, it was actually the last day of shooting that Alan Arkush was hospitalized for exhaustion and Joe Dante came back in to do three scenes. The one where PJ Souls sings her version of Rock and Roll High School in the gym.
Oh.
The long take in the bathroom and the scene involving the telephone booth.
That pivotal scene.
Yep. Despite the fact she's playing a high schooler, PJ Souls was 28 when the movie was filmed and was actually older than three of the four members of the Ramones. Only Johnny was older.
Okay. Yeah, we'll come back to that.
Mary Warrenov plays the tyrannical principal Togar, is only 7 years older than PJ Souls.
Togar of the hill people.
Togar. The motorcycle ridden by the hall monitors was a death machine from the Corman movie Death Sport. Apparently he just had it lying around.
Of course he did.
The romantic theme song heard under the credits, Did We Meet Somewhere Before? Did you recognize that?
No.
Paul McCartney and Wings. Originally it was written for the theme to Heaven Can Wait, but Warren Beatty decided not to use it. Somehow, Alan Arkush swung a deal where he could use the song for only $500 as long as he didn't put McCartney's name in the credit.
Hey, you know what? Roger Corman could give me $500 for not putting my name in the credits of any of his films.
Yep. The role of Eagle Bauer, played by the great Clint Howard, was originally written for Eddie Deason.
Oh.
You guys are so dumb. I can't believe I figured out Falcon's Maze. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he was busy doing Steven Spielberg's 1941.
Oh. Oops. Lucky us, because in that way, we didn't have to see Eddie Deason twice. We didn't have to see them in this, and of course, nobody saw him in 1941.
Nope. There is, in addition to Clint Howard, there is other Hollywood royalty in this movie.
I beg your pardon.
He's in one scene, Grady Sutton, who plays the school board president. He's in one scene. He has been in movies for over 55 years.
Well.
And he is one of the great bit players. He worked with W.C. Fields. He's been working with everybody.
Oh, royalty.
Yeah. Roger Corman's original title for the film was Disco High until Alan Arkush heard the Ramones and decided he wanted to use them.
Okay.
There is, as I'm sure you all remember, a sequel to this movie.
No, I did not
know
there was.
12 years later, Rock and Roll High School Forever, 1991.
Oh.
You may have missed it because it was straight to video.
That good, huh?
And it starred Corey Feldman.
Oh.
Mary Warrenov came back, and Larry Linville.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That hurts.
Yeah, doesn't it, though?
Do you know who the band was in it? Was there a band?
There wasn't a real band. I think Corey does a lot of singing.
I think he was in a band for a while.
I think he was.
Maybe he was a backup singer in Dog Star. Look it up, kids.
God. There are some interesting cameos in this movie. The director, Alan Arkush, is the ticket taker at the Ramones concert.
Ah.
Oh, no, we can't let any mice in. They've been exploding all over the... Oh, you got your headphones? Okay. He's wearing a green Fillmore East jersey. He used to work at the Fillmore East performance venue in Manhattan.
Oh.
Rob Bowden, who is the special effects and makeup artist, shows up as the giant white mouse and Mrs. Mouse.
Well, we will see his work later in The Thing, among many other films. Mm-hmm. He's actually became a big deal.
Yeah. And Joe Dante shows up as a riot cop with sunglasses.
Ah. Ooh, I should say.
Even though he's not credited in this film, this is the first acting role, on-screen appearance of Huey Lewis, and the News.
I'm sorry. You're just too darn loud.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, this was before. Yes, he is plays the vice principal Kovner. He has no lines. He's the guy, he's wearing big glasses. You see him standing next to Togar a couple of times.
Oh, and he'd reprise that role in Back to the Future. Okay.
A little thing about the Corman. Although most of the credit goes to Corman for this movie because he's so famous producing cult movies. If he had had Final Cut, all the Ramones songs, in concert or otherwise, would have been cut in the middle of the song. There would have been fewer scenes with Riff and Kate, including the scene where they're discussing boys, with Joey being like a poem. Arkush had to fight for control to have his vision, but he had to be subtle, because Corman was the boss. He told him the girl scenes together fleshed their characters, so the ending made more sense before blowing up the school.
Sure.
The one thing that made Corman want to make the movie.
Uh-huh. Or should we say two things?
Yeah. There's a bunch of other stuff, yeah. But I think that's plenty, unless you got something?
No.
Then let's get to the intricate plot. All is peaceful at Vince Lombardi High, where winning isn't everything, it's better than losing. The kids just want to get some kicks and meet some chicks as they rock out to the Ramones. But lo, the new iron-handed principal, Miss Togar, is having none of it. She and her merciless cartoon character, Hall Monitors, think the kids need discipline and lots of it. But standing in her way is the impeccably coiffed and strangely mature Riff Randall, rebel, rocker, and lovers of all things Ramone. Worse, she's corrupting her best friend, science whiz Kate Rambo, First Blood Part 2, to her wicked music-enjoying, fun-having ways. Kate, however, is in love with football captain and Anne McCaffrey reader Tom Roberts. But Tom has the hots for Riff. Oh, how wacky! But the enterprising Eagle Bauer, offers them some Tranya and sets them on the road to romance. Riff is desperate to attend the Ramones concert in town in order to show Joey Ramone, that hunk muffin supreme, her songs and profess her undying and rather disturbing love for him. Miss Togar will have none of it, trying to stop Riff from going to the concert and ultimately offering her final solution. Unfortunate choice of term there, Togar. Burning a bunch of records. Boo. Oh, no! This triggers a full-on student rebellion and impromptu concert, which results in Togar's mental breakdown, innocent cafeteria workers being Apple Brown Bettied, and, of course, mass destruction of public property. Yay! Blowing up taxpayer-funded buildings. Rock on! Gabba gabba hey!
We accept you.
The film.
So, Max, I'm going to take a wild guess that you did not see this in the theater when it came out.
No. Actually, I did.
Really?
Well, it wasn't the exact year it came out. I think it was the year after. It was some point later when it became the midnight show at a local theater.
Not the Harvard Square.
No, the Orson Welles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I saw it there a bunch of times. How about you?
Well, I can't remember the exact timeline, but this may have been the first film I ever saw on videotape.
Oh, wow.
We actually had, at our high school, there was a student who was her own version of Riff Randall, except she didn't look like she just fell out of a disco roller skating rink. Mm. And she was a huge Ramones fan. She loved the Ramones. And she
who are the Ramones?
Which ones? There's been a lot of them. There's been like
eight. Yeah, there have.
She had a bootleg copy in like 82 of this film, and she brought it to school, and a few of us skipped C block and went into the closet in the AV room and watched it. So this was either the first film I saw on video or it was Alien, because a friend of ours, a very common poll question answer on Mr. Charles Forsythe, had pre-release copy of Alien that we watched at his place. And but this may have been the first film I saw on videotape, new format. So, yeah.
What did you think of it at the time?
I remember liking it, but that was over 40 years ago, so don't know. But what I do know is that this film has people in it.
Yes. They do. Many people who play parts. And let's talk about them. First off, of course, we have the, star. PJ, she's probably on screen the most, although there are others. PJ Souls, a.k.a. Riff Randall. PJ Souls is a decent actor. We've seen her in we've seen her in Carrie. We've seen her in a bunch of she was in the original Halloween. Okay. A lot of horror movies. She's not the best choice for the sort of rebellious, nonconformist rocker.
Ramones fan.
Yeah, that's the other thing. She does not look like a Ramones fan at all.
No.
Way too clean, way too immaculately presented.
I found her borderline annoying.
Okay, well, I would have found her annoying if she had more dialogue. There isn't a lot of dialogue in this movie.
I think that's the only saving grace of her performance, is she doesn't actually get that much to say. Because she's just bouncing around and she just doesn't feel real. I mean... Mm-hmm. Not a fan of PJ Souls, no.
Okay. I liked her in Stripes, but okay. And then, of course, we have part of the Van Patten Empire, or sure. as they say on Mystery Science Theater, the Van Patten Project. Vincent Van Patten as Tom Roberts, football hero, yet somehow also nerd. It's kind of an odd character. And he's tall.
He's blonde. He is blonde.
He exists. He's competent. I mean, he's having some fun with it, you can tell. He knows the character is supposed to be a dork.
I think he's trying, but it's so against type that he doesn't have any idea how to actually be a nerd or not sure of himself. Because if there's one thing Vince Van Patten is not, and that is unsure of himself. He swaggers, as I think the right word.
He swaggers sitting down.
Especially in, what is it, Master Ninja.
Oh, with God.
Him in his van and his hamster. So,
his Lee Van Cleef. Yes.
Quite honestly, of the Van Patten clan, I don't know that many of them. I hate to say this, but I think Dick Van Patten's a better actor than Vince is.
That's not saying a lot, but nope. Yeah.
But now we come to Hollywood icon.
Hollywood icon Clint Howard. The man has been in over 200 movies. He's been
and
in
he has
everything.
Five more coming.
He has literally, he's got five in pre-production.
Yeah.
This is Ron Howard's brother. Rance Howard's son, Bryce Dallas is Howard's uncle. That's him. And he has been we all remember him, I'm sure, from Star Trek as Balok.
Well, he was in Apollo 13.
All of Ron Howard's movies. It's very sweet. Ron always gives his brother a job.
Yeah, we were looking at his creds before the show, and it was like literally every show you can think of from the 60s and 70s, he was in
the 80s. Hell, he has a bit part in Austin Powers.
He was like, 2 years ago, he was in a soap opera, and it was something like five episodes or something.
And so, I will say, I think he's always fun to watch. He has a very strange kind of charisma. He is certainly not classically good-looking, shall we say. He's distinctive.
Yes, you always know it's Clint Howard, always.
Yes. But I always like to see him. I think he's fun, and there's just something inherently likable about him.
I just, he's out there trying, and he's still out there working. You know what? Good for you, Clint. Good for you. We applaud you here at Max Mike Movies.
We do.
You have a hell of a lot more credits than I will ever have, so good for you.
Maybe we should do an entire Clint Howard series.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
Ben Max, Kildozer. That's a very interesting idea.
I'll write it down.
We can call it, Here's to Clint.
Yep. Well, like okay. that. Okay. Wow. Let us know what you think. You would like to see a Clint Howard series? I think that would actually be fun. And we got Day Young, if that really is your name.
Sure.
As Kate Rambo. She didn't exactly go on to do a whole lot. She did do one thing when I looked. I was like, oh, that was her.
Yeah.
She is the saleswoman who is rude to Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman.
Haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Which still pisses off Bill O'Lading no end.
Yep.
She's actually, of the characters, I think she is the most believable.
She's also, there's something very charming about her.
Yeah.
She also seems like the one who could also almost be a real person.
I don't know what a believable real person is doing in a Roger Corman film, but hey.
Yeah. I mean, the characters are all supposed to be cartoonish.
And he just paid for it.
Of course, Mary Warrenov as Miss Togar.
Who's probably one of the best things in the film.
I would put her, tied with our next guy, Paul Bartel. But I think Mary Warrenov is wonderful. She's given 110%. She's just throwing herself into it. She has to spout out this ridiculous dialogue, and she somehow makes it work.
Yeah, but how many times over the years have you and I said, do your parents know your Ramones?
So many times.
Of course, the answer is probably not, because none of them are actually related to each other.
No, and none of them have the last name Ramone. It was
Do you
sort
know
of
where the
gimmick.
Name came from? This is so weird.
No, tell us.
So apparently, and I didn't know this, before they were the Beatles, but after they were the Quarrymen, the Beatles were known as the Silver Beatles. And
yeah,
for some reason, Paul McCartney billed himself as Paul Ramone without the E. And that's where they got the name for the Ramones.
Oh my God. That
Isn't
is very
that weird.
That is so obscure and yet very punk rock.
She's sort of the Nurse Ratched of the high school set.
Yeah, kind of.
Or what was her name from Invaders from Mars? You didn't go on the field trip, David Gardner. Oh, it's the same actor.
Yeah.
She's great, though. She was fun. Yeah.
She was a lot of fun. And, of course, then we have Paul Martell, who has also been in everything, usually when you need a slightly uptight guy, as Mr. McGree, the music teacher, the only teacher who eventually becomes cool.
With a K.
Such as it is,
He also, along with Mary Warrenoff and I think two other people in this film, all went on to make a film called Eating Raoul, which I thought was strangely coincidental, but there you go.
Odd indeed.
Yeah.
Right from that great line, which, again, that's another one I quote, who are the Ramones?
Yeah.
I love that. And he gets hit in the ear with a paper airplane. Ah, ear mail.
Yeah. Like, I gotta say, though, as cool as he is, he's no Dick Miller.
He is no Dick Miller. Roger Corman staple, Dick Miller, has a small part as the police chief in this. He's the one who says these Ramones, ugly, ugly people.
Yeah.
And I just, even his nonverbal, when Togar is stating her ultimatum and going, the police chief wants to storm the building. I don't think we need to do that.
Good old Dick Miller. We've loved him since Bucket of Blood.
Yep. Then we have Don Steele as Screamin' Steve Stevens, a character who every time I see him, and he's in a lot of stuff, you just want to hit him in the face with a shovel. I'm sorry. He's so irritating. We've already seen him in Grand Theft Auto. He was Curly Q Brown.
Wasn't he playing the same
Death
character?
Race. Yeah, he's very often an obnoxious sort of
radio
DJ,
disc jockey,
TV host, whatever.
Yeah.
And as such, he's... does what he does.
We can briefly mention Alix Elias as Coach Sterry, and she's fine. I must admit, seen this film a few times, did not know that the hall monitors were called Fritz Hansel and Fritz Gretel.
I remember that from seeing it after one. I've seen it a number of times.
More like Regretel, but...
the one who plays Fritz Hansel, who is the shorter one, is Lauren Lester, who went on to be a major voice actor. Most notably, he's the voice of Robin in Batman the Animated Series.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. Well, good for him.
And Nightwing later. He does a whole bunch of... basically plays Dick Grayson for many years.
Well, how cool is that?
Yeah.
Much better than this.
Cool.
And then there's a bunch of people that are in there.
Yeah, and then there's some other people.
Oh, yes, and the Ramones are in there.
Yes, we have four Ramones who, out of... there have been, I believe, a total of eight.
Yeah.
The four originals, unfortunately, are all no longer with us.
Yeah. Interestingly, you know who the original drummer was for the Ramones?
I do not.
Joey.
Joey was a drummer.
He was the drummer. He was originally the drummer.
Wow.
And they were like,
of course, it's Marky.
He had to fill in for, actually, the original drummer after Joey was Tommy, and then Tommy got replaced by Marky. But apparently, he had to fill in doing vocals at one point, and they're like, we should have him up front. No drums for him. No drums. More riboflavin, more
wheat germ. Yeah. So. Yeah. Yep. I have always had a great fondness for Mr. Jeffrey Ross Hyman.
Yeah.
AKA
Hyman?
Joey Ramone. Hyman.
Hyman?
There is not exactly a plethora of Jewish punk rockers out there.
No. So yeah, it's a cast of
Many.
A lot of Roger Corman favorites, and then a few other people that would go on to do very Roger Corman-like films.
And a number of people went on to do absolutely nothing.
That too, yeah.
Yeah.
Quick question for you, Max.
Yeah.
Any student at this high school under 30?
yes.
Technically, yes. PJ Souls is 28.
Well, no, and Clint Howard was 20.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
There is nobody of high school age in this high school, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it suffers from that. We're in the, you know, what was that? There was a big high school show from Disney. I can't remember
which one. They keep having to shoot them right so you can't see the guys all have bald spots. Or
have you ever been to Zac Efron? Anyway. Sorry, that's
I've been to Zac Efron, but I've never been to me.
I love in the opening credits, you get all these people. And then finally it says, and the Ramones. It almost felt like they were looking for that other band up till the last minute. It's like, hey, keep that spray can out to make those credits because we're not sure who's going to be in this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It felt to me like as we open this film that we're going to get another teen sex comedy. I don't know.
Which is what it's supposed to be, sort of. It's a teen rock and roll movie like the kinds they had in the 50s and 60s, but it's so exaggerated. It's almost a parody of it.
Well, it's missing two things to really be a teen sex comedy, and that is teens and sex.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of close-ups of production values.
Not really, though. Like,
you don't think there's a little gymnasium scene?
It's not even like the cameras are like zoomed in. We're not talking Catholic high school girls in trouble here. You know, I think it's more like Catholic high school girls having a nap. It is
remarkably vanilla.
Yeah,
although. There is a scene where Riff gets high. She's actually smoking a blend of rosemary and other herbs. I gotta say, I have never had such a powerful hallucination from marijuana ever, where basically the entire band, the Ramones, appears in her bedroom and serenades her with I Want You Around.
Yeah.
That scene, I didn't see that scene the first time I saw the movie. In fact, I didn't see it for years because a lot of theaters cut it. They thought it was too suggestive because, first off, it shows the use of marijuana.
No, it doesn't. You can tell that that is not a joint.
Yes, it's parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. But also, you see Riff, from the back anyway, naked, getting into the shower with at least one Ramone who is fully dressed and playing his guitar. Yeah. By the way, I want to know where the Ramones got those magical guitars that can play anywhere without being plugged into anything.
I mean, it's punk power, I guess. Yeah, that's sure.
The power of their rockin' squibbly flabbly do.
Well, I mean, I'm sort of curious here. Are you a Ramones fan?
I am. Yeah. I like the Ramones a lot. I have always had a soft spot for them, and I find them just very catchy. And as far as punk music goes, and they were the forerunners, man. They were 1976, they came out with Blitzkrieg Bop, which was like a year, maybe two, after punk hit the scene. They're only a year after when Johnny Rotten and Sid Vicious started up with the Sex Pistols. These guys were punk pioneers, especially in this country.
It's funny that people think that, because as far as punk goes, they're actually not that punk. I mean, they do covers of old rock songs, and honestly, their stuff's not really that angry.
But they have that same kind of driving rhythm, the same kind of, you know, use of only two or three chords. I will say they're not particularly punk in that they're all fairly competent on their instruments.
Now, that's just mean.
I know. No, and to be fair, the flagship of punk in this country, anyway, the true pioneer has got to be Patti Smith. She was probably the first.
I don't know if I'd consider her punk either.
Are you kidding me?
Here's the thing. Punk tends to be very, very fast and very, very angry and is often very socially conscious. And I'm not saying she isn't some of those things. I just don't get the same vibe from her that I get from a lot of other punk stuff. But
really, you think that covering Frank Sinatra is punk, like the Sex Pistols did?
But that's the least of what the Sex Pistols did. I mean, then there's all the drugs, but we won't get into that. You can just decide how you will. And to be fair, my delving into punk is fairly limited, and I have a very specific style of punk that I like. But it did surprise me getting into it, how many social issues they sing about. I mean, a lot of them, the really good ones are angry for a reason. They're really uptight. And the 80s was a time to be uptight because there was a lot of bad stuff going on. I'm kind of amazed we don't have punk now, quite honestly.
God save the Queen. She's a dirty fascist fiend.
Yeah. And you're like, you didn't do stuff like that in Britain back then. So, what did you think about the humor in this film?
I think some of it still holds up. I have to say, it still makes me laugh. I love Eagle Bauer's office. It's in a bathroom stall.
Yeah.
I like the fact that when Kate walks in, someone yells, "Girl, hide!" And they're all just covering their eyes so they can't see.
Right, because she's fully dressed.
Yes, but she's a girl in the boys' room.
Okay.
I like some of it. I still think the hall monitors are pretty funny.
I think I liked them better in the 80s.
I like the running gag where one of the I think it's Fritz Hansel, keeps accidentally handing what is clearly a love letter to Miss Togard or somebody. So he starts, "My darling Evelyn, how I've longed for the feel of your luscious thighs." Sorry, wrong note.
Yeah, yeah, he's obviously. I thought the humor was odd, but it tended to fall flat. Like, it didn't really make me laugh. I could see that it was almost like, oh, you underlined this part, so I knew it was funny. Okay, I get it. But I just, didn't think the humor worked too well. So
I thought there were little bits like when we were in Eaglebauer's office and he's presenting Kate Rambeau as a possibility to Tom.
Yeah.
And he says, tell him about it, Johnny. That voice is Johnny Gilbert.
Okay.
The announcer from Jeopardy for 40 years.
Don Pardo was the announcer for Jeopardy, not Johnny.
He was after Don Pardo left.
Don Pardo was the one who was with Art Fleming. Oh, you mean the guy who was with Alex Trebek?
Trebek, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd have been your father, Trebek, but the dog beat me up the stairs.
I forget the rest, but your mother's a whore.
Okay. I did think it was really nice that the movie had time to stop twice for a little Native American racism. That was great.
Well, which was it besides the scalper?
He shows up twice.
Oh, he's up twice. Yeah, yes. Yeah, scalper is a very clearly white guy dressed as Native American.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty tacky. We haven't
seen sensitive, deep portrayal of a Native American like this since F Troop.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to say, there is a scene that I thought was funny, but not for the reasons they wanted me to think it was funny. And there's a scene where Eaglebauer is trying to teach Tom how to make out in a car. Mm-hmm. Couldn't help but notice that even the sex doll looked bored.
Yeah, that was one of the least erotic, vaguely sex scenes you're going to run into.
I mean, the only sexy thing was the squeaking of the doll. Like, whenever they touched it, it would squeak. And it's
you found that sexy?
Well, okay. That's the closest we got, you know? So, whatever. Also, I did notice, I don't know if you did the math, but do you know how much it cost to see the Ramones back in 1979? Yes.
$10. Their best Ramone tickets were $10.
That's it.
Holy crap.
I know. I'd pay $10 to see the Ramones. Of course,
you know, I would absolutely pay more that much.
Did you get any hint that Riff Randall was the kind of person who actually liked the Ramones?
Nope. Not even a little.
No.
And not to mention, I got to give PJ Souls credit for when she's talking about, oh, I love Joey because he's tall and handsome. I remember watching this movie at midnight in the Orson Welles, and shall we say, some of my fellow patrons may have been sampling various
spliffing
libations and such, as well as possible herbal remedies. Mm. Because right when she says, you know, he's tall and handsome, this guy a few rows ahead of me starts screaming at the top of his lungs, "Ugly! Ugly! 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 Ugly!" Whole theater broke up.
Wow.
I mean, yeah. And it's like, oh, it's so sexy when he eats pizza. It's like, no, you're wrong.
Well, luckily they didn't, you know, shove us over the edge by letting us actually see him eat pizza, because that would have been too much.
Whew. Yeah, yeah.
They just show his manager shoving wheat germ into his mouth. So that weird.
No pizza for you, Joey. You got to have more wheat germ, more riboflavin.
Yeah. Poor Joey, poor Jeff Hyman. He suffered from a condition, and I can't remember the name of it, what it was called, but it actually involves the lengthening of bones, which is why he was so tall and gangly. It's everything from the finger bones. It can cause really bad curvature of the spine, and it's not treatable, or, you know, it's not curable.
Yeah. Oh,
but that's why his build was so odd. You know, facially, whatever. Yeah. I have to say this for Riff Randall. At least she likes Talking Heads. That's all I'll say.
Yes, she does. Yeah. But I still also found it kind of strange when they're burning the records. Yeah. Well, there's a bunch of Ramones records, but there's also Bob Dylan's Highway 61 Revisited.
Yay!
Oh, shut up. All his all your taste is in your mouth.
Don't like Bob Dylan.
I know. It's a classic rock album. It's,
sure.
It is as far from punk as you can get.
But it's so objectionable. Those lyrics, they mean things to someone somewhere. Maybe Bob. Don't know.
Sure.
To be fair, I've never listened to that album. I just, that voice, that nasal cloying voice. Yeah, so.
About three quarters of the way through the film, it turns into a concert movie.
All right, we're going to go there now.
Let's go there now. We get like 10 minutes worth of just Ramones songs, including lyrics on the screen. So I think you're supposed to sing along with Teenage Lobotomy.
I couldn't tell if it was that or they're afraid that we wouldn't know what they were singing. And I was like, if this song, why not the other ones? Because some of them are even harder to understand. So here's my question. I know you're asking me about that. I'm going to turn this around and ask a question for you. Was that giant chunk of concert footage payoff or filler?
I think it was supposed to be payoff. This was obviously a movie for people who liked the Ramones.
Was it?
And if you, yeah, if you like the Ramones, you want to hear them play.
I think if you like the Ramones, you don't want to watch the rest of the film. That's my guess, because you do not care about the nice squeaky people in high school. That's my guess.
Okay. All right. I don't agree, but.
I was just like, wow, they are, it's, Roger's looking at this and he says, look, I understand the science of motion pictures. A film has to be a certain length or it won't get bought by theaters to be shown in their theaters. So we have to fill this time. So let's just let the Ramones sing and there we go. Because there's,
except he didn't want them to sing. He wanted to cut them off. He wanted
which
the
is
songs
weird.
To be half as long.
Well, yeah. The thing is, the Ramones songs tend to come out at between a minute 50 and 2 minutes 35. It's not like there's a lot to cut out there.
They're very concise, yes.
Yeah. So to me, it just felt like filler. There's nothing happening. The plots, such as they are in no way affected by this concert footage. It's just the Ramones playing at a supposed real venue. They said it's the Roxy. It's like, okay, sure. And I could tell that the people in the crowd never heard of Vince Lombardi High.
No.
So, I don't know. For me, it was just filler. You obviously think it's payoff?
I think so. I think that's supposed to be a high point.
Well, the big... do I want to do this now or do this at the end of the show? I'll do this at the end of the show. Hey, we get furries.
Yes.
Kind of.
You get the same guy dressed as a giant mouse twice.
Yeah. Once in a dress because he plays his own mom.
That's right.
What do we think of the rat suit?
It's appropriate for a Roger Corman movie.
I suppose. In another film, it might actually have been the villain. Who knows?
I was wondering, did they use that in Food of the Gods? I'm not sure.
Oh, gods, I want... No, it's brown.
I don't know. They were actually using rats there.
Well, no, there is a suit. There is a suit. When a guy gets... They get attacked. When Marjo gets attacked, it's a suit. Oh, Marjo. Do your parents know you're a Marjo? Remember, we did trivia on him. We found out why his name is that. It's the combination of Mary and Joseph. All right, we should do this, too, though. Favorite quotes besides the ones you've done already? You got any other ones? I know you do.
Oh, there's a bunch. I got to say, a lot of them come from the hall monitors. I always just liked, for years, we were just going, demerit.
Yeah.
And, you know, body search.
Well, that also came into play when you worked at the Harvard Square Theater.
We used that. The problem is most people didn't recognize the quote. Yeah. But there's a bunch. I mean, do your parents know your Ramones? I think is probably the best one.
I had a couple that I didn't remember because I haven't seen this in a while. One of them is, I don't want to have fun. I want to be with Tom. Or.
Right. The only thing I'll ever lay is a rug.
Another one. No, not the Tuesday surprise.
There was a line in that when they're throwing stuff at the cafeteria workers that I had never heard before. I turned the subtitles on because they yell something before that. Not the Tuesday surprise. Like, we were only following the recipe.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will also say, because of your mention of the headphones, People say, oh, I'm getting older, I can't understand. No, I did not need headphones for this film. I did not need subtitles for the Ramones. I could hear it just fine. It was not mixed the way they do it these days. If you're wondering if it's you and if it's the movies, it's today's movies.
It is the way they mix it.
If Roger Corman can get the sound right, then today's Hollywood can get the sound right. I'm just saying.
If Roger Corman can make it so you can understand what any of the Ramones are saying, it can't be that hard.
Yeah. You know what else isn't hard is us coming to the end of the film because we're at 56 minutes now and deciding whether we actually liked the film.
The finish.
So Max.
What?
Do your parents know your Ramones? Yeah. When was the last time you saw Rock and Roll High School?
Oh God, it's got to be 20 years ago. I think I saw it on a videotape at one of the movie marathons.
And I think you actually said last week that you wanted to revisit it because you remembered liking it and you wanted to see if it held up.
Yeah.
So, Max, does Rock and Roll High School stand up? And if so, or if, well, I suppose if so, would you recommend it to a today's audience?
Honestly, for me, I enjoyed it. But I can't separate whether I enjoyed the movie or I just enjoyed the memory, if it was just nostalgia for me. If you are a Ramones fan, then yes, I would recommend it because there's a load of Ramones music. They're having fun. They're looking silly. But if you are not a Ramones fan, you should stay away from this movie because it's loaded with Ramone.
I just sprayed for Ramones last week.
It's a Ramonapalooza.
Gods.
I like them. I like them. I like the soundtrack. It's not just them. There's all sorts of stuff in there.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, Nick Lowe singing And So It Goes. The only song I know of his is You Gotta Be Cruel to Be Kind.
Oh, okay. There was another one in there that was a big staple of 70s AM rock, and that was Smoking in the Boys' Room.
Yes, which Brownsville was, I thought, Station, very perfect. Brownsville, yep, that's it exactly. Brownsville Station.
Yeah, they're local to here. But
I don't think that it's a great movie. For a Corman movie, I gotta say, it moves along well, it's paced well, it's very short. It's like 97 minutes, maybe. Yeah. The concert footage, if you don't like that, that's a lot of the movie. So I would say, yeah, if you're a Ramones fan or if you just want something really silly that you don't have to take your brain out of, hell, you don't even have to turn your brain on to watch. Yeah, I think it's fun. I get the feeling I may be alone in this.
I didn't say anything yet. You haven't asked me. I'm just sitting here waiting.
I can see your face.
That's me considering.
That's your considering face. Sure it is. Well, Mike, how did you think of it? How did it hold up for you?
I remember seeing it in high school and having fun, and we've been quoting for years, so on and so forth. I disagree. I think the pacing is slow. There are two major plots, one of which is, will Riff Randall get to go and meet Joey Ramone? The other of which is, will Kate Rambo actually get to kiss Tom? Neither one of those things do I care about. The concert footage just feels like filler. It's literally like, hey, we're going to stop the movement of those two plots, and I do mean movement, and we're going to sit here and watch the Ramones for 10 minutes. That's all we're going to do. Nothing else is going to happen. We're just going to watch the Ramones. Okay. There are some lines in there that are fun to quote, but in general, no, I don't think it holds up at all. I don't even think it's a particularly good focus on the Ramones. Yes, they play. Yes, they're in it, but they kind of feel like, what if the Ramones were guest starring on Donnie and Marie?
I would pay to see that. I would love to see, because I know like one of them would end up busting one of Donnie or Marie in the mouth.
Instead of saying, girl, we can't get much higher, why don't you say, girl, we can't get much better? Better. Girl, we couldn't get much higher.
He'll never play the Ed Sullivan Show. Man, we already played the Ed Sullivan Show.
My recommendation is go watch Pump Up the Volume. It's a very similar sort of thing without the Ramones, but it's a much better film that doesn't get a lot of airplay or talked about or something. And go see our episode if you want to. But yeah, it's very Roger Corman-y. it is New World, and that's his production company. So yeah, I think it was borderline dull. And if you don't like the Ramones, like Max said, don't even bother, because that's the whole point, really. So, yeah.
Well, we got some disagreement on
I'd say avoid it, but what you shouldn't avoid.
Mike is wrong.
Is our poll question.
Yes, indeed. And we want to know, what band or musician who hasn't made a movie yet would you like to see in a non-concert film? And I would count, you know, you can have like part of a concert in it like this one does, but something like Help. One of the, or Hard Day's Night, stuff like that. Yeah. And you can answer this burning question by going to our website at maxmikemovies.com. You can leave a comment there. You can also tell us, you know, what you think of the series? What you think of, were we completely wrong? Was just Mike completely wrong? Spoiler, Mike is completely wrong. And what do you think of a Clint Howard series? You can also email us at us@maxmikemovies.com. You can find us on Mediocre Socializing.
Oh, Facebook, Blue Sky, or Mastodon. Oh, are we still doing Mastodon? Is that a thing?
No, I'm giving up
on Mastodon. Yeah, okay, so Blue Sky and Facebook.
Blue Sky and Facebook, yep. You can find us on the podcast app of your choice, and you can join such luminaries as Doris Hempelmeyer and Real Julia Roberts and call our hotline.
I hope she's okay.
To leave a voicemail at 617-398-7266. Again, 617-398-7266. Operators are sprawled unconscious on the floor. But we're still going full steam ahead with our Cuz I Wanna and You're Gonna Like It series. In fact, we're probably going to extend it. But before we extend it, what are we going to see next, Mike?
Well, I mean, you dug a little deep for quality this week. You went with a very journeyman production company, but I want a master. That's what I want. So I'm going to take us in a much different direction. I'm going to go for somebody with master quality. Such a master, how to put this, not an everyday master. I want a beast master.
Oh, Lord. Now I know why they call it V.
Here's the best part. Oh. I had to double check because I was like, have we not done Beastmaster? No.
We have never done it.
We have not done Beastmaster, which is a film that is got...
Technically.
It's got film, John Amos in it. It's got Rip Torn in it. And of course, it's got... what's his muscle? I can't...
Yep. Mark Singer. Mark Sargent. Singer.
Yeah. It is... And I'd be very interested to find out, have any of you out there not seen Beastmaster?
Or at least, have you not even seen, like, a couple of scenes when you're flipping past the Sci-Fi Channel or something?
Well, so, next week, we're going to watch and talk about Beastmaster.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.